Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies. This is a bonus episode of the Season of the Witch. As you know, Halloween has already passed, and I wanted to do one more episode to celebrate Día de los Muertos, a day that is very important in traditional Mexican culture, and that has become more important for me since the passing of my wife. Now, if you've seen the movie Coco, then you probably are aware of Día de los Muertos. But if you haven't, or if you haven't and you're just curious, I wanted to take some time to talk about Mexican culture and really kind of lead it into talking about Mexican horror movies. Now, Día de los Muertos is a day in which we celebrate our loved ones who have passed away by making ofrendas, and those are altars, that we basically put pictures of our loved ones and we decorate with cempasúchiles, which are marigolds, beautiful flowers. We also put, you know, decorations like sugar skulls as well and papel picado, and we'll put the things that the person enjoyed, usually food, could be a meal, it could be a snack that they enjoyed, a beer that they liked, a bottle of tequila, whatever this person enjoyed in life. And we do it as a celebration of that person's life, celebration of life in general, but also a celebration of what's to come in death, because death is a natural part of life. And Mexican culture in general has just a lot of supernatural elements in our folklore. We have, you know, the traditional elements that were brought over by the Spanish with Catholicism, but because of the indigenous people, the Aztecas, the Maya, and many others that were in Mexico and throughout Latin America, we have all these wonderful stories and that have to do with ghosts and witches or brujas. You know, stories of like La Llorona or El Cucuy, which is the boogeyman, El Chamuco, which is an interesting way of referring to the devil. On top of that, you know, culturally we have things like Las Momias de Guanajuato, which are mummies that are in the city in Guanajuato. We have the Canales, where there are stories of mermaids, of sirenas. And that's just to say, you know, that really we have plenty of things to talk about when it comes to Mexican horror. And unfortunately, I'm not super well informed about Mexican horror, but there's definitely some movies that I wanted to point out from throughout the history of Mexican cinema. And starting with one that is kind of a cheat, because any chance I have to talk about the Universal Monsters, right? I wanted to start by talking about 1931's Dracula, which is the Spanish version of Dracula, which was actually shot at the same time as the Bela Lugosi Universal Monster Dracula movie. Both were shot on the exact same sets. Basically, during the day, the English production was completed, and at night, the Spanish production was completed. The interesting thing is, if you watch these movies back to back, or side to side, if you see comparisons like on YouTube or something, you can even see like the markings, and like by which I mean like where people are supposed to stand and everything like that are similar. And the big difference really, I think, comes down to Bela Lugosi as Dracula and Carlos Villarías as Conde Drácula, which, you know, Dracula. We also have Lupita Tovar as Eva, the Mina Harker character in this movie. Dracula is actually a really, really well-made movie. And in a way, I mean, depending on your sensibilities, it's probably a better-made movie than the English version. Of course, the English version has that super iconic Bela Lugosi take on Dracula, that take that everyone is aware of. But I feel that a lot of people just aren't as familiar with the Spanish version. I think that one of the cool things is a lot of the repackagings of Dracula will have the Spanish version as well, and it's just interesting to see it, just to see a different take on it, and also to compare and contrast things like the type of dresses that were worn, wherein like the English version is much more covered up, not so much with Lupita Tovar and some of the other actresses in the Spanish version. Dracula, I mean, it's a fun movie. It's something that I think most people are aware of, and I've talked about vampires ad nauseum, so there's nothing really new there, but it's just great to see this different take, like almost like this alternate version of that movie. And one that I think a lot of times, like I said, isn't super well known by most people. Now, as I mentioned, in Mexican culture, we have like this fascination with ghosts and with the supernatural. And a lot of the horror movies that have kind of stood the test of time from Mexico have to deal with ghosts. So we'll be talking a lot about ghosts actually today, starting with Hasta el Viento Tiene Miedo, or Even the Wind is Afraid, which came out in 1968. This was directed by Carlos Enrique Taboada. And basically it's set in a boarding school where we follow these girls who are on their spring break, and there's restless spirits around them who are taunting them and are kind of leading to this not unknown, but hidden sort of secret that's about what happened to someone at this school. There's a lot of exploitation sort of elements in this, which is one of the things that's really interesting to see in Mexican cinema, because after the golden age of cinema and before the rise of, like, you know, Alfonso Cuarón and Iñárritu and you know, my favorite, Guillermo del Toro, there was almost like just this exploitative nature in general for Mexican cinema. So we really get a good idea of that with this movie, and probably more so with 1975's Satanico Pandemonium, Las Exorcistas, which is a part of the nunsploitation exploitation subgenre. In this movie, we follow, this was directed by Gilberto Martinez Solares, and we follow Sister Maria, played by Cecilia Peset, who is a nun who is basically tempted by these visions that she has of Enrique Rocha, who plays Luzbel, or Lucifer. In this movie, and this is a straight-up exploitation movie, so we have scenes of nudity, implied sexuality, children being hit on by nuns, people getting straight-up strangled and hung. This movie is very interesting just because, once again, coming from the Mexican culture, which has a very strong spiritual background, specifically for most people, Catholic, but even within that, Mexican Catholicism has some deviations from mainstream, or I guess what you would consider just regular Catholicism, because of the melding of the indigenous religions with Catholicism. So, for example, in Mexican culture, the Virgin Mary, La Virgen de and specifically La Virgen de Guadalupe, are very important, probably as important as Jesus Christ when it comes to Christianity. And a lot of that has to do with indigenous religions having to do with, like, moon goddesses that are very similar to La Virgen de Guadalupe. And La Virgen de Guadalupe herself is very much, she looks Latina. I don't know how else to put it. She has brown skin, dark hair. She's the patron saint of Mexican culture, really. We have plenty of saints, but that's the one that overall is the most important. And so to see a movie that takes those religious elements and puts them on their head, and also, not that Mexican culture is necessarily as repressed as American culture when it comes to sex, but to intertwine that intertwining of religion and sex definitely is a taboo. You know, it's interesting to see in a movie, and especially something that's just some straight up exploitation. But exploitation, like I've mentioned before, can be important. At the very least, it can be interesting because it has us ask questions about things that we don't normally want to talk about or that we want to address. Now, some of the greatest auteurs have dabbled into horror movies, and I've talked about plenty of them. But one that I think is kind of synonymous with Latinx cinema is Alejandro Jodorowsky. And Jodorowsky, in 1989, directed Santa Sangre, which is probably one of his best-known movies. I've talked about Jodorowsky before with El Topo. Santa Sangre is this, much like everything else that Jodorowsky's done, this really insane, fucked up, twisted fairy tale, almost. In this one, we follow this young man, Fenix, who has been in an asylum, and he leaves the asylum and kind of remembers why he was put there to begin with. His mother was the leader of this church called Santa Sangre, where they worshipped this young girl who was martyred. She was killed by her, raped by her father, and she was killed having her arms chopped off. And in this religion, they worship this little girl and that sacrifice that she made. And also, as the movie progresses, Fenix becomes basically the hands of this missing girl, in the sense that, not like this girl's like a zombie or anything like that, but the person, the woman in charge of this this cult-like church, has her arms chopped off as well, and she has people do her bidding, being her hands, basically, and sending them out to do what they do. Because this is Jodorowsky, there's really weird, fucking insane tangents, probably the craziest of which is a sequence where these special needs children are dropped off to go see a movie, and a pimp basically takes them to go have sex with an obese hooker, all set to Lupita, which it, man, it's just, it's crazy. Jodorowsky's movies are just insane to begin with, and Santa Sangre, much like his other movies, isn't a straight-up horror movie, just like El Topo isn't a straight-up Western. There is all these other, you know, elements in it that just make it insane, but definitely fun and worth checking out. Recently, I think horror has kind of become a go-to in Latin culture in general, and just in general, I think, all over the world. But I wanted to talk about a couple of more recent movies as well, and some different things and some different takes on horror. And the first is La Región Salvaje from 2016, which was directed by Amat Escalante. And this movie is basically a drama more than anything, and it really has to deal with these couples who, and their sex lives, really. But the characters that we follow end up coming across this meteorite and this alien within that meteorite. Because of this, their contact with them, it ends up leading to the destruction of these people, but not before, you know, they're actually not for the actual destruction. We kind of see the deterioration of their relationships and the kind of awakening or reawakening of their sexual desires as well. This, I think, this is a movie where some people may argue that it's not a horror movie, but there's definite horror elements. And even when we're talking about giving into some of those like urges that people have, you know, and giving into taboos and giving into those desires, you know, not that giving in is horrific, but the way that this movie presents the consequences of those actions can lead to some horrific situations. And I just think it's a very interesting take, and I think culturally a very different take on what can be seen as horror. In 2017, we also had Vuelven, which is known here in the U.S. as Tigers Are Not Afraid, directed and written by Isa Lopez. And this is a movie which really has some elements of, like, some of the, I'm thinking of, like, Los Olvidados or something. We follow this orphan children, five in particular, who are a gang who are basically trying to escape the violence that is being perpetrated by members of the cartels in Mexico and the violence that surrounds them. On top of it, one of the little girls, Estrella, she comes across this, she comes across this thing that allows her to have three wishes, the first of which she wishes for her mother to come back. But much like a monkey's paw, the wishes don't happen the way that you'd expect or the way that you'd want them to. So her mother does return. Ella vuelve. But she returns as a ghost. And then once she is able to see her mother's ghost, who tries to keep her safe and warn her as much as a ghost can, she also starts to see, along with the other kids that she hangs out with, other ghosts. And the ghosts aren't necessarily presented as evil or as trying to straight up like harm the children. More of the danger comes from the living than the dead, much like in zombie movies a lot of times, or in other ghost stories. Vuelven is a beautiful movie. It's really well directed. It's great to look at, and it's a very interesting take, almost like I mentioned with Santa Sangre being almost like a fairy tale. This is more so of a fairy tale, something more along the lines of Del Toro's El Laberinto del Fauno, the Pan's Labyrinth. But Vuelven is great, and I can't recommend it enough. But speaking of Del Toro, I have to take an opportunity when I'm talking about Mexican horror to talk about a couple of his movies that were made, in Mexico. And the first is Cronos from 1993, which was actually Del Toro's debut as a feature film director. Like, he had worked in TV and done some shorts before it, but Cronos was the movie that really put him on the map. And Cronos led to Mimic, which is all right, and Mimic then eventually led to things like Hellboy and Pan's Labyrinth and the movies that he's doing to this day, and eventually getting an Oscar with The Shape of Water. Cronos is this really interesting take on vampires, basically. Excuse me, once again, going back to that vampire well, but the story revolves around this device, which looks like a scarab, but within it is the secret to immortality. And we follow the main character, Jesus Gris, played by Federico Lupi, as he discovers this creature and then ends up meeting a couple of interesting people. Ángel de la Guardia, played by Ron Perlman, which is his first collaboration with Del Toro, one that they've continued, into Hellboy and other movies. And also De la Guardia, or Mr. De la Guardia, played by Claudio Brook. Cronos is just this interesting, different take on vampires, because it's more about the consequences of immortality and things like that, and the people that want that for them and what that leads to. I can't talk about Del Toro enough. I think, he's a great director, and he always has just these wonderful way of shooting his movies, of presenting what he wants to do, and the stories that he wants to tell are always a little off center, not necessarily what you exactly expect, but his movies are very much always kind of steeped in Mexican culture. A lot of what he presents in his movies, well, most of the movies aren't actually set in Mexico. Cronos is, but the majority of his movies are set in other parts of the world. But those sensibilities, that culture that he grew up with, is present in his movies. Anything from, the take on fairies or how ghosts interact with people, to something as stupid as the fact that Hellboy himself drinks Bud Light and Tecate Light in those movies. But speaking of Del Toro, another one of his best movies is El Espinazo del Diablo, which came out in 2001. El Espinazo del Diablo is almost like the other half of Pan's Labyrinth, where Pan's Labyrinth or El Laberinto del Fauno is more of this fairy tale take, where we follow this girl as she tries to reach this fantasy world where she's a princess, and it's set during the Spanish Civil War. El Espinazo del Diablo follows a 12-year-old boy, Carlos, who is living through the Spanish Civil War and ends up at an orphanage where he discovers that it's haunted, and he is basically, he meets this one ghost who whose name escapes me at the moment. Santi is the ghost, who basically attaches himself to him and tries to warn him and tries to keep him safe. But once again, just like El Laberinto del Fauno, like, the supernatural elements aren't necessarily the ones that you need to watch out for. It's humans and the shit that we do to each other and the violence that we do to one another that is really what we have to watch out for. And once again, I think that that whole take very much mirrors what life could be like in Mexico from day to day, and what the impact of kind of living through that, which Del Toro has talked about in interviews, you know, just being able to, just seeing this, having this religious upbringing where people are supposed to act one way, but they never do, and just the casual violence that can sometimes occur in, you know, growing up. It's, you see it in his movies. And I think Del Toro is great. I think basically any of his movies are worth checking out, and any opportunity I have to talk about him, I will take. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was the movies of El Santo. Now, El Santo was the greatest luchador of all time. He was a cultural icon, and luchadores and lucha libre are wrestlers. They're Mexican wrestlers. Mexican wrestling style is very acrobatic. Most everyone wears a mask, and El Santo is the greatest one of all time. Was he the greatest wrestler? No, but he had this cultural impact that is felt to this day, and to the point that he even showed up in Coco as one of the people in the afterlife. El Santo has, first of all, he has this iconic mask, which is this silver mask that, I feel like almost in growing up a wrestling fan and going to see Lucha Libre, and my dad being a wrestling fan when I was younger, at least, you know, like, I grew up with El Santo and with Blue Demon and some other people. And on top of that, also, El Santo and Blue Demon were involved in movies. El Santo made a shit ton of movies, and usually they were this mix of him being in either gangster movies or sci-fi movies or horror movies, and there usually was an intermixing and a mingling of all three. The first one that he came out in was Santo contra el Cerebro del Mal, or Santo versus the Evil Brain, in 1961. And as I said, you know, El Santo, he had a career that spanned decades, and his movies are just straight up exploitation movies. I think they're infinitely watchable, but I wouldn't say they're necessarily good. I mean, these are movies that are extremely low budget, but they're really fun. And as I mentioned, you know, he, as his movie career progressed, other wrestlers, and even to this day, luchadores are in movies in Mexico. But I'm thinking of stuff like the Las Momias de Guanajuato, which stars not only El Santo, but also has Blue Demon, which was one of his biggest rivals and also one of his biggest allies in the wrestling ring, and also Mil Máscaras, who has that name because he would always, while he had the same design, his mask always changed. Blue Demon, much like El Santo, had his iconic mask, which is a blue mask with white fringe around the eyes, mouth, and nose area. And El Santo, like I said, is just all a silver mask. And I think one that I love, and I actually have a poster of this up, I used to have a poster of this up in my office and up in my room now, is Santo y Blue Demon contra Drácula y el Hombre Lobo, or Santo and Blue Demon versus Dracula and the Wolfman. I mean, like I said, these movies are not the best, but I think they're a lot of fun. And I don't think you can talk about Mexican cinema without mentioning El Santo, and to a lesser extent Blue Demon, just because they are, even to this day, they're important in the culture. And their sons, El Hijo del Santo and Blue Demon Jr., are still wrestling to this day. So, like I said, I just kind of wanted to take an opportunity to celebrate my culture and celebrate cinema from Mexico, and to do that on El Día de los Muertos, I think, is fitting. So that's actually going to be it for this season. Thank you all for listening. I know that this format was extremely different from the past. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, we'll see what the future has in store. If, you know, I at this moment, I don't really have an idea for a fourth season, but that may change. And if it doesn't, it's been a pleasure to do these three seasons. And thank you for listening. As I said before, whether it's been one episode, whether you've stuck it out for, I don't know, however many episodes I'm at now, I think it's over 200. Thank you for taking the time, and thank you for indulging me in my endless tangents and occasional rants, and in me just enjoying talking about movies. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, and have a good day.